Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into MediaZest. It's the first time we've had the CEO on the podcast, so we're going to start off with looking at an overview of the business, and then we're going to drill down into a very recent set of results and look how the company has been performing over the last year. So to do that, we're very kindly joined today by Jeff Robertson, who is the CEO of MediaZest. Jeff, welcome you to the podcast today.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you very much for having me.
Really looking forward to this conversation, Jeff. It is a time just after results that we actually saw quite a positive reaction in the market initially. So we're going to be getting into the drivers behind that. We're going to be looking at those results and looking at your figures. But as this is the first time that you've joined us on the UK Investor Magazine podcast, it would be really good to get a solid overview of the business. So if you could start off with an introduction to yourself and a brief introduction to MediaZest, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the CEO of MediaZest, a PLC. We're AIM-listed, as you know, and we specialise in audiovisual solutions. So quite often they're creative, quite often they're based around digital signage and innovation. We work in several different sectors, but the key ones really for us is retail, we're predominantly known for, automotive, and that's very much sort of showrooms, so automotive retail. And we also do work in corporate offices, you know, teams rooms, shared spaces, collaboration areas, that sort of thing. The driver, the thing that connects all those things is the audiovisual side of it, and innovation in the audiovisual, but also deep experience. So when MediaZest PLC first began, they acquired a company which was an engineering AV systems solutions partner and sort of built on that. So our real ethos is we bring you innovation, but we also bring you, well, it's now 50 years that business has been going. So 50 years of experience to back it up and make sure it really works. And that really works well with our clients. So it's kind of, you know, this is the future, is what you should be thinking of. We can help you go through that. But also we've got like this deep understanding of where the pitfalls are and how we can make that work for you.
Staying with the business model for one moment, if we may, it would be good, of course, you mentioned their audio visual, but just to really paint a picture for listeners in terms of what they could expect, where they would see your products and how they would be placed with your customers. And also you mentioned they're really interesting, which we have to pick up on, a business that's been going for 50 years. It would be good if you could add some context before we actually get into the recent results a little bit later on in the podcast, what that 50 years has looked like, maybe focus on the last 5 to 10 years and where you've been and where you are now.
The business that we acquired in September 2005 was called Touch Vision Limited in those days, and it had a couple of names before that, and that was set up in 1975 as ES Video, and there was a lot of things like video duplication and services around that, and they're one of the first companies to take sort of screens in retail to market. And when MediaZest came on board and bought them, the whole idea was that we could build on that experience and the fact they'd sort of started in that area as digital signage started to come into retail. And that was, well, we were probably well ahead of our time. I think it's probably fair to say. It's took a long time to get to the point where digital signage has become sort of part of the mix for retailers. And, you know, if you go out into any store, any high street, any shopping centre, anywhere in the UK, pretty much anywhere in the world these days, you'll see screens in retail. So typically we put them in window displays or behind cash desks or ordering kiosks, touch screens, things like that. So the stuff that we all come across in everyday life. But I guess the journey sort of 5 years ago, probably around about the same time as COVID, I think it was probably about the time people really starting to see the benefits. And of course, people with things like window screens during COVID could get messages across quicker in terms of when people are open or not and helping people through that, you know, very difficult period. So I think it was kind of, yeah, the last 5 years, sort of digital signage has become a household understood name in the industry. And we spent many years sort of preaching that and evangelizing about that as a solution to enable our customers to communicate to their customers and to do it quickly and effectively and in an engaging way and you know, really achieve whatever they're looking to achieve in their retail stores. So the business, we're based in, our headquarters in Woking. We have lots of really highly skilled engineers, lots of really passionate people who really enjoy what we do and enjoy the type of solution that we put together. We're very lucky with a great range of sort of household name clients. And it's a fascinating, you know, cross-section of the retail sector in the UK and globally. And you see sort of lots of different use cases, lots of different ups and downs. But yeah, the sort of common thread is communication to their customers, communication to their staff, you know, the wider brand building, you know, all of that sort of stuff. So the journey last 5 years has been really, and I think this is sort of borne out in the results, you'll see it's almost been a turning point in the industry, in that we used to go into meetings and pitch and try and explain to people what digital signage was and why you might use it and why that might be interesting for their business. And now the conversations we're having is why we'd be the best person to put that in for them and how we approach it and how we would achieve that. So it's been very interesting. And I think the results reflect the fact that, you know, the market has really started to mature and grow and sort of come to us. And we were maybe, yeah, just probably 10 years too early, something like that. But yeah, it's good to practice and get that sort of that deep understanding of what we do. You know, we did a lot of stuff around flagship stores where there was maybe budget to do something innovative and a bit different. And now the business is really now based around, you know, networks and infrastructure and being able to communicate across the company's whole range of stores, not just one or two, which is obviously much more effective in sort of reaching their customer base. So yeah, it's been a really interesting journey into what we do. In terms of how we actually operate and how does our business run in terms of the model, there's a couple of ways we make money. So one is sort of projects going in, installing and selling to our clients, you know, hardware and software and professional services around installing those either in a retail store or a car showroom or in someone's head office. It's all B2B. The second way we make money is by recurring revenue streams on top of that. And that will be things like support and maintenance, ongoing content management, in some cases, content creation. We're not really a sort of creative agency in the sort of, you know, the ad agency type sort of sense. We are capable, though, of putting together digital assets where we take, you know, maybe a client's static communication like posters and turn that into a digital asset they can use on screens and get their messages across in a more compelling way. So lots of services that are based around the ongoing use of, upkeep of, and data around the installations that we do. And of course, the actual original installation can be quite lumpy, you know, in terms of when projects are. And anyone who's worked in retail or in showrooms will know that, you know, very often lots of moving parts, projects can get delayed. It makes it really difficult to predict revenues, to predict when budget is going to be spent. And that's why the recurring revenue side of it is so important. And we've spent a lot of time over the last 5 years, again, talking about that journey where we've been really focused on developing that side of the business so we can make sure we've got consistent revenue streams, even when projects can delay and slip back, which is, you know, not uncommon in the retail world.
Of course, I mean, the recurring revenue streams there are particularly important for that revenue visibility, and having that there, I'm sure, has shored up the investment case for a number of investors. Just looking at the landscape, I noticed one of these in a shop recently. It may be one of yours, may not be. But in terms of the competitive landscape, how many people are doing this at the moment, Jeff? And what are MediaZest doing different to the competition?
That's a really good question. I think that gives us a really interesting opportunity. And I think that's definitely what I would say would be one of the compelling parts of the investment case for us. There are a lot of relatively small players in the UK. Sometimes, you know, with one or two clients that they've sort of grown, looked after, you know, taken good care of over the years, but maybe not with the investment or with the balance sheet to sort of grow and go beyond that. So we see that our competition is lots of, yeah, like I said, relatively small players. There's no one big player that everybody goes to in the market for sort of digital signage in retail, certainly not in the UK and not really across Europe and the rest of the world. So we think there's a massive opportunity to pull together some of those businesses, which maybe don't have access to capital, but have got the will and the skill set to expand, and put them together with ourselves and really use the PLC and the listing to be able to achieve that. And as the market's matured, like I say, I think, you know, our competitors have finding the same thing. Some of the clients that have maybe dabbled, the wrong word, but started to use digital signage, started to see the benefits, but it's taken them some time to get to the point where the business case is compelling enough to roll it out. They're starting to get to that point as well. So it's a perfect time on the back of, you know, some really good results and some significant contracts in our business to really accelerate with that strategy, if you like. And we're very engaged in that at the moment. We really believe we could put together a sort of best-in-class digital signage group, you know, that can service not just the UK, but Europe. We've got a European subsidiary, and we handle, you know, most of our European clients, you know, headquartered out of here, out of the UK, with that subsidiary to help us. But we think, you know, there are clients crying out for local companies and local markets that they can help them service them better, whether that's in the UK or beyond. I think putting it together as a sort of as a roll-up strategy, you know, makes a lot of sense. Obviously, there's lots of economies of scale. I think one of the things that we always talk to our clients about in terms of their projects is that we can really get them excellent deals and value at volume. So I think combining multiple companies to be able to buy in bulk and deliver that to the clients and pass on those savings, yeah, it's got a really compelling argument. Plus, everyone's got engineers. The more engineers you've got, the easier it is to be flexible, deal with things quickly, to support easier, to support better. So there's lots of good options operationally that can help do that as well. So yeah, it's an interesting market. It's quite fragmented. There are lots of companies based around, you know, maybe one or two big customers that we can, well, we believe there's a real appetite to sort of to grow together with and combine that into a really exciting group that can, you know, deploy further and further in a better and better way.
Sounds like it's very much going to be an acquisition-driven future for MediaZest. I'm sure that's something that the investors will be keen to see how that develops. One question that I've got, because anybody based in London, everybody get on the tube, will see the displays as you go down to the tube. Of course, what you're doing is very different. But the question that I have, and it's from a customer's perspective, in terms of how do they measure success? Because, of course, if you have one of your screens, they're already in the store. So, you know, they're halfway there to making a purchase. That's a very different experience to, you know, going down a tube escalator and seeing something next to you there in terms of the advertising side of things. So how do you measure success for your clients, Jeff, and what's the feedback that you're getting at the moment from them for those that have it installed?
There are several ways we do it. For a start, Jonathan, there's lots of different ways we would measure it depending on what we're trying to achieve. So in some cases, it might be a brand putting in a screen as part of a display in someone else's store. And when there might well be, you know, the pure driver is profit and top line revenues. And it might just be simply a case of looking at sales. You know, did that go up when you put a digital solution in or not? Sometimes it might be a retailer with multiple screens in different parts of the stores with lots of different use cases, and then they might be measured in very different ways. And I think there's the real skill to that from the retailer side of it, to really understand what impact it's having, as you know, quite often where it could be a new store or it's a store refit or a refresh. So there's lots of things going on. It could be designed to look different. There could be lots of new fixtures. There could be a whole new proposition as well as our screen. So it's kind of difficult to say, well, it's just purely down to the digital signage in here that's making this happen. There are specific things you can measure though. So whenever we put a touchscreen in with a customer journey, we'll measure the back end of that in the same way you measure, you know, clicks on a website. You know, you'd be able to track, you know, how many people are looking at something, you know, where are they going, what's the navigation journey, and then, you know, fix that, improve that, turn up different bits you want to, you know, to really emphasize, etc. So it enables our clients to put in, you know, touchscreen experience, have a sort of, you know, whether that's a self-guided sale or an ordering process, and then measure how successful that is. Where are people getting to? Is that working? Is that achieving our objectives? So that might be much more about use data. So yeah, it just really depends. There is technology where you can track how many people have sort of walked past a display, and then we can work out, you know, what's the conversion rate from that display as well. So there's lots of different things. The feedback that we get, I think uniformly, I'm trying to think if there's ever a case that we haven't had that, is that, you know, it looks terrific and it helps elevate the store or the proposition. The challenge is, how do you isolate, you know, which elements of that are driving, you know, the change in revenues or what have you? And of course, the other complication is, you know, it's a tough time for UK retail at the moment, you know, in terms of how's the wider market performing. So, you know, a retailer might be slightly down in terms of year on year, but they might be outperforming, you know, percentage wise their share of market they were from the year before, in which case you would probably say it's a success. So it gets very complicated. We always try and help our customers wherever they can measure it, because then you can sort of show the ROI and generate that. I think something like, you talked about the out of home stuff and things like the tube, obviously, you know, that sort of advertising industry works on, you know, eyeballs and number of people looking at it, and there are ways to measure that as well. And then you can give some, you know, backup data to how many people are seeing it. There's some really interesting stuff going on as well in different markets. There's sort of a slight adjunct to what we do, I guess, is what you call retail media networks, which is where, and you'll see this a lot in supermarkets, I think pretty much all the major supermarkets in the UK now, where they will put screens in and they will sell the ad space in screen in store while someone's at the point of purchase. And there, things like loyalty cards and data is really important to help brands and guide them what works and what doesn't. So I think as the market's matured, that measurement is becoming more and more understood, and more action that people are looking at more carefully. I think at the end of the day, there is still a case for, if you've got a very heavily branded store and your brand is very clear in your marketplace and you want to show people when you walk in, this is where you are, this is what we do, this is our ethos, then, you know, a giant LED screen with some lovely brand content, you know, showing what your brand is all about, and it, you know, is really impactful. And that's very difficult to measure, but I don't think anyone would walk into any of those stores and disagree that, you know, it wasn't incredible to look at.
Indeed. I mean, this all sounds, it's all about improving the experience, because of course, in the world of online shopping, those stores that are remaining open and sticking to their guns and wanting to get more people in, it's all about having the in-store experience and improving that. Easy to see where MediaZest's AV solutions fit into that. So we're going to move on to the numbers now. Released at the end of last week, starts off with the top line. Looking here, it was about a 33% increase in revenue from 3 million in 2024 up to 4.1 million in 2025. What were the key drivers here?
Well, I think a couple of big contracts, but I think across the board as well. You know, we spent, you know, talked about the journey the last 5 years and probably before that, and I jokingly earlier, you know, we were probably earlier to market than the market was ready for. But all of that experience and all of that work in those years, building up customers, building up client basis, you know, is starting to come to fruition. So one of the things we think we're quite different is, and like I said, we're very lucky to have lots of fantastic brands we work with and retailers. And because we've got quite a range, a lot of them we've worked with for many years. And as they continue to grow and invest in digital signage or in our other solutions, that, you know, really helps with the bottom line, and it's helped grow the recurring revenue. So that's helped. We picked up a couple of sizable contracts in the last, you know, last sort of 12, 24 months. So one of those is with First Rate, which we talked about in July 25. We signed a contract after a successful pilot. We also have a contract with a brand we work with globally in duty free, helping them with solutions in duty free stores. So, you know, there's a couple of specific contracts that have really helped us, but also lots of our current clients, you know, continuing to grow their networks and grow the work they do with us. So it's been sort of across the board, and that's enabled us to grow on, like you say, we grew, you know, from sort of 3 to just under 3.1, just over 4.1 this year, but also the year before that was 2.3. So, you know, significant growth the last 2 years. And in terms of outlook, we believe we can break 5 million this year. So again, another sizable increase, which, you know, I think shows the direction of travel of the business.
Looking ahead to 2026, you know, you mentioned there that the revenue increase last year was driven pretty much by some larger contracts. What does it look like in the year ahead? Is it likely to be a year that is driven by more large contract wins? What's the pipeline look like? Is there going to be some smaller deals in there? Do you have any visibility over that at the moment?
Yeah, so visibility in our industry, particularly in the retail side of it, you know, can be difficult. Like I say, things can move very quickly. But yeah, certainly I think all of those contracts and all those big clients that we work with, we name check a few of them in the annual report, they're all continuing to work with us and continue to do more in 26. You know, I think the order book for the year ended September 26, so we're a 30th September year end. You know, it looks very, very strong. So we're really pleased with that. Yeah, beyond that, the growth in recurring revenues really helps us, because that gives us some certainty of those revenues. And, you know, by and large, people continue to renew with us because, well, we think because we do a very good job and we work very hard for them, but also, you know, because we deliver a service that they need and continue to need. And ongoing support and ongoing content, you know, is a crucial part of the solution. So, yeah, we're very optimistic about the year ahead. I think this year's, you know, started really, really well. And like I say, those contracts continuing as we start 26, and we're getting towards the second half of the year now. We'll be putting out interims fairly soon. Only just got the full year out, but we'll be thinking about that next. So yeah, 26 looks good. I think the pipeline looks strong. It's now our job, I think, to really build on that for the next year ahead for 2027 as well.
So beyond the larger contract wins and indeed new contract wins, what are the increasing revenue generation opportunities within your existing client base? Do you see them moving the products into new stores, expanding the reach? Is that a big part of your growth? And maybe another part of what else could be driving revenue here? Your technology and, you know, what you're working on behind the scenes. Do you have new products that you could be working on that you could be then offering to existing clients?
In terms of where the revenue growth is, absolutely doing more for our current clients in more stores, enhancing what we do for them currently in stores, and also adding new clients to do that. And, you know, we're always out pitching, and, you know, it's a long road sometimes in terms of, you know, what we do is quite involved. You know, quite often we'll be talking to people who design stores, people who design infrastructure systems, IT, marketing people, you know, so to bring on a new client, there is, there's quite an effort. And for a client to invest in what we do, there's quite an effort from them as well. There's always ongoing efforts to do that. In terms of products, we're very much like a best practice, you know, systems integrator, if you want to think of it like that. So it's not so much products that we're providing, it's more how we use products out there to really put together the best solution for our clients, depending on what their needs are. And there'll always be budget in there, but it could be, you know, longevity. It could be a particularly difficult environment. Maybe there's heat, you know, it could be a high brightness environment like a window, you know, so we'll recommend the right solution. And we spend a lot of our time talking to the manufacturers in our market, looking at new products coming through, new techniques of doing things, new displays. So we're always doing that. And there's a big exhibition in Barcelona every year in the beginning of February, which we attended, and we'll pick up ideas that we'll then take to our clients about what they can be doing going forward. And I think that proactive, bringing them more innovation and the partnerships to be able to deliver it and put it together into a fully fledged solution for them, that is a real skill. And that's where we kind of set ourselves aside. You asked that earlier, and I think I probably didn't address that element, but, you know, why, where do we set ourselves aside? I think, you know, one is our experience, and two, our knowledge of how these solutions go together and delivering them. We're also slightly different from some of our competitors, or a lot of our competitors, in that we have our own engineering base in-house. And I mentioned at sort of the beginning of this podcast that we acquired that when we bought Touch Vision back, you know, when Mediasys first started. So we had that engine room to really credibly deliver. And I think that really helps us. So the fact that we're sending out engineers that are our engineers that we've trained, you know, that work for us full time, that are dedicated to these systems, and have probably, if they're coming to help service a problem, they've probably installed it themselves, or their colleagues have certainly. So it means that we can really deliver a top class service for our clients. I think that's, yeah, we would definitely say that's where we'd try and set ourselves aside. And also that proactive layer where we will go out to the market and say, look, we've seen something that we think this could really help you. You know, we can tackle this problem in your business. We can help you with this. We can improve that. So yeah, I think that's a really important part of what we provide for our clients.
Sticking with the results now, Jeff, looking at the profits, you swung to profitability this year. What do you have in the pipeline? What are your plans to make sure that that profit continues into the next year? Because just looking back here over the last 5 years, and of course it's been a period of great change for you, there have been periods where you recorded a profit and swung back to a loss. I think a question for investors, and a question that investors will have, is, you know, what do you have in the plans at this point in time in terms of the visibility that you have over revenue and then the operating model to make sure that profit can continue in the years ahead?
I think that's all about the growth and the recurring revenues and the contracts we've got in place. So we spent a long time building up the client base. It's getting to that point where they have the need to roll out at scale what we do, and that puts us in a great position to continue grow revenue, which we expect to do. As I said, you know, we're targeting over 5 million this year, as in financial year 26 ended 30 September, and commensurately, you know, hitting sort of $250,000 plus net profit. Yeah, that's really based around those increased recurring revenue streams and the increased customer base and the number of stores they're doing with us and their plans for the future. So I think there's a really strong organic growth we're seeing, and we have seen the last, as I say, last two years already, and we expect to continue next year. Beyond that as well, I think it's also then merging in the acquisition strategy. You know, can we bring on like-minded teams and clients and businesses to help us continue that growth and really push on?
Just want to pick up on operating margins quickly. How do you see these progressing? Are they fairly static as the top line grows, or is it a case that you could actually see some margin expansion there if the top line grows? What does that look like going forward?
It's a bit of a blend and a bit of a mix depending on what projects we're doing. Typically, you know, with the advent of, you know, what is a very competitive market, and also, you know, with the ability for people to check in the internet very quickly and, you know, and procure from pretty much most places these days, yeah, margins on the actual hardware, you know, aren't particularly huge. So they're pretty consistent anyway. The where we do make our margin is more around, I guess, the professional services side, because a lot of that's in-house. So that's costs covered under the overhead. So the blend at the minute, we sort of operate roughly between sort of 50 to 55, 56% gross margin on average after, you know, direct cost of sales. I think, you know, we've been very, very consistent with that over the last at least 5-10 years. We don't see that changing. You know, the projects that we're working on now, the projects we've got in the pipeline, you know, all I think look very similar to that. I think that's probably fairly consistent. So yeah, I don't think the operating margin is anything we worry about. In terms of driving that higher, obviously the percentage of the revenue that is driven by costs that are in-house overhead, you know, the more of that there is, the more that will go up. So the more recurring revenue we can add, the more services around that we can add, the better. We are trying to do that in terms of adding more content, more data, etc. I think it'll remain pretty consistent in the next year or two. I don't see any major changes either way.
So one other thing that I picked up in the results, and this is actually a post-period highlights that you had in the results, was a restructuring of the debt, which looks quite interesting. What did that look like, Jeff? And what does that mean for the company going forward?
I think that's a huge win for us this year. So we've been very lucky, and we've had some very supportive shareholders over the years who've provided debt funding at times when maybe the share price was made raising equity prohibitive, or we felt would be difficult for shareholders. We've been very lucky. At the same time, what's happened is that's built up that debt and the interest on top of it, when at times we've not been in a position to pay that out in cash. And so we have sat down under our new chairman, Keith Adelman. So we sat down in the summer of last year and negotiated in the months following it to restructure that debt to a level that the business can support, the business can repay over time, and can help us really drive ahead. So yeah, they've been really supportive, put an agreement in place that we signed just after the year end. And that's meant that we've been able to write off just over $500,000 of interest. And we've agreed a payment reschedule for the principal that will go, I think it's about 6 years to 31 or 2032. And that gives us the breathing space to be able to plan the growth better, I think, and help us invest, with confidence. Also gives them a timeline to get repaid that money. I think it's a great win all round. And certainly the response that we've seen from shareholders has been really, really positive on that. I think it's very much appreciated. Like I say, the shareholders have been very supportive. Those were loans to help to help everybody, really, all shareholders, that they've taken responsibility on to help everybody out. And only right that we repay that in full over time. But what it has meant is, of course, losses because of interest charges over the years, and that's now gone. So there's no interest on it moving forward. We're sticking to the timeline of the repayments already. I think that's a huge win for the business. Really helps the balance sheet and, really helps us moving forward.
Indeed. I mean, just the removal of those interest payments that are really going to propel the bottom line forward, especially if you're doing good work on the top line. So to wrap things up now, thank you very much. It's been a really comprehensive conversation today. Investors, maybe looking at MediaZest, what would you point them towards as a guide of what you would see as the most exciting things in the year ahead for MediaZest?
Obviously, the results show for themselves, and that we've got to keep delivering that. We understand that. I think some of the work we've done, if you check out the website, there's lots of examples of what we do for our clients. There's some really outstanding work we do. And I think things like debt restructuring, as you said, we also repaid off an invoice discounting facility. So again, there'll be more interest to save moving forwards. We won't have those charges. There was a post-year-end fundraising we did recently as well with some new and existing shareholders. So there's some great support there. I think it's a really exciting time for the business. We've always had real ambition to drive this on and to really sort of grow the top line and the bottom line accordingly. I think that sort of the time is now, if you like. Those new contracts really helped us, the business that we've grown. And, some of that was hard yards over many years. The support from the shareholders on the debt has really just put the business in a cracking place now to grow both organically and hopefully by acquisition as well. That we can really start to utilize the fact that we're AIM listed, which I don't think we've really done over the last few years, and really show, some leadership in this market in the UK and beyond.
Just as a note to listeners, if you'd like to know a little bit more about MediaZest, do check them out. Their ticker is MDZ. And as Jeff said, you can find out more information on their website. So, Jeff, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.